I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George. Let's do a little bit of reflection on steps one and two before I read something that is not AA approved literature, but it is AA literature. Figure that one out, guys. We walk in here and we come in here with the fact that I don't know how you came in here. I came in here because I like the effect that alcohol produced for me. It says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems like the only natural one. That was my life. That explains who I was walking in these doors. I had a struggle for a long time with coming to the belief that this is an illness. And it talks about, we come to believe that this is an illness, and it involves those about us the way no other human sickness can. If it engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers, brings misunderstanding, fast resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, anyone can increase on this list. And I came to that understanding that I did have a disease. I didn't like the idea that it was a disease. I thought it was a moral flaw that I had. And I thought if I did the right thing, then I'd be okay. But I still drank even when I was doing the right thing. A little later on in the big book, it talks about a body badly burned by alcohol doesn't recover overnight, nor does twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. I don't know about anybody else, but when I came in here, I was miserable. I was depressed. They put me on medication, which I fought, and then I didn't like it. Then it worked. Then I didn't want to take it. You know, no unmanageability there in my life. And then there's a part in the book. It says, you cannot picture a life without alcohol. See, that was my thing. I kept visually, when I had a year, I'd be able to drink. When my kids came back in my life, I'd be able to drink. How can I go my whole life and wait for my daughter to get married and not drink at the wedding? I mean, that was the warped perception I had when I got in here. It says he cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either without or with alcohol. Then he will know loneliness as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. I will tell you that did not happen before I got here. That happened 6 months into my sobriety when I walked out of an AA meeting and was served with papers to give my children up. See, because I came in here to deal with my ex-wife, marrying the guy I caught her with years before, and wanting my children back in my life. Now you're taking away my reason to be here. And alcohol always was my solution, and that's what I was looking at. So that's pretty much how I see my first step when I walked in here. And coming in here with warped perception, faulty judgment, and lack of an awareness, I didn't make very good decisions. So there's a part that my sponsor always told me. He says, you don't like to be told that you can't drink safely. I didn't like that. And it says that it did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life. We're in full flight from reality, and we were downright mental defectives. Now, the full flight from reality and maladjusted life I can deal with, but that mental defective thing, that was bothering me. And until I came to believe that I had an illness that centered in my mind, and I believed it not in my head but in my heart, I couldn't get that first step. So until I conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, I couldn't take that first step. That's the reflection of the first step. And then it comes into, there is a solution on page 25 and 26 where it says, if you're a serious alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle-of-the-road solution. We were placed in a position where life has been coming impossible, and we had passed into a region from which there was no return from through human aid. We had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out of our consciousness our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. This we did because we honestly wanted to and were willing to make the effort. I honestly didn't want to, and I wasn't willing to make the effort. So I kind of stayed sick in Alcoholics Anonymous on that second step for a long while. And last week I talked about how I was led to the second step through the second tradition, through the people in the rooms. I believe that my God has skin. I hear him in rooms like this when I relate myself to the meeting. And it says, much to our relief. Now, I had a sponsor. I had a lot of trouble with the God thing, you know. I knew when I read the second step, step three was right behind it. And you were going to be talking about God. God and I didn't talk since I was 7 years old when my grandfather died. I talk about the third step. I remember praying once from the time I was 7 till I was 44. And that was when my daughter was born. And she was born with a hole in her heart. She had a brain problem. And she had a breathing problem. And I prayed that day. And as soon as she was okay, God and I stopped talking again. So that's part of my third step. But it's also part of my second step. Because I really didn't believe. I did a lot of things because if I did good, I thought I'd get a good result. And I don't think God bargains with me that way anymore. So much to our relief, we did not have to discover need consider another conception of God. Our own conception, however limited, was good enough to make us start. I argued with my sponsor that I believed that I didn't believe. He said, so you're telling me your belief system is that you don't believe there's a God? I said, yes. He said, good, that's all you need. Your belief system that you don't believe is good enough to start on step two. What the hell did that mean? I had no idea, but it made sense at the time. What he did do is ask me to write my conceptions of what a God of my understanding would have and what attributes that God would have. So I made a list, and he said, good, start praying to that. I've made prayers. I'll get into the on the knees, off the knees thing in the third step in a minute. I made prayers when I was in trouble. Get me out of this one and I won't do it again. And as soon as I got out of that one, I said, well, maybe the next time I won't do it again, but let me try it one more time. That's how I prayed in my second step before I got here. And believing there were powers greater than me, I always had them. It was money, property, and prestige. Those were my higher powers. I shared that last week. As soon as we admitted the possibility existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of all things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms to those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad and roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive, or forbidding to those who honestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men and women. You know, when I got here, I really had my own belief system. I tried TM years ago. I did EST. I did Pyramid Power. I chanted. I lit candles. I dropped acid. All those were spiritual experiences. I don't know about you, but those were spiritual experiences for me. And I was seeking God in every one of them. Unfortunately, that was not where God was to be found. And we'll get into that in step three. But that's what I did before I got here. So I had a lot of beliefs before I got here. A lot of them were warped and twisted, and I had to let go of my old ideas. We need to ask ourselves but one sure question. Do I believe or am I willing to believe? See, I didn't believe. But I was willing to believe that my sponsor believed. And that's where I started my bridge to the second step. I believed in my sponsor. And that was the first tangible evidence of a power greater than myself working in my life was my sponsor. As soon as a man says he can believe or does believe or is willing to believe, we empathetically assure him that he is on his way. So that belief was enough for me to start going to that third step. There's some promises in the second step. We don't talk about promises in every step. We usually talk about the ninth step. Some of the step two promises. Spiritual principles solve all my problems. What a promise that is. All my problems, not just my drinking problem, not my wife's problem, my job problem, my work problem. It would solve all my problems if I applied spiritual principles. It says, we have lost faith and we found it in AA. It's the rallying point to sanity. We begin the right relationship to God. You see, that God thing still was bothering me. So, you know, I get through the second step, and those are all in the 12 and 12 between page 25 and page 33. It says, besides seeming incapable of accepting much on faith, we found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. I tell my sponsors all the time when they read the big book, there's three or four spots with the little arrowstick that says, please go back and read the spiritual experience. At the bottom of the spiritual experience, it says that there is one principle that leaves a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. See, I was contemptuous for everybody in this room when I walked in here. And I had most contempt for myself because I didn't like me. So if I didn't like me, I couldn't like you. So I came in here and a third step was impossible. But as I did the first and second step and did the work my sponsor laid out in step three, I was becoming a little bit more easy. Still difficult, but a little more easy, a little bit easier. Many of us have been so touchy that even a casual reference to a spiritual thing made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty casting aside such feelings. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be another question. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. In the big book, in the 12 and 12, when we get to traditions, it says there are two authorities. One is a loving God who says, do my will, and the other is alcohol, who says, if you don't do God's will, I'm going to kill you. And if those are my choices, I think I better believe in something. So those were my choices when I got here. There was nothing left, not from where I came. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hoped no one else would be as prejudiced for as long as some of us were. I was pretty prejudiced when I got here. I didn't want to talk about God. I didn't like the idea of God. I didn't believe you guys had a God. I just thought you guys were just crazy, absolutely nuts. And every time I said I was nuts, my sponsor says, sure, you know what nuts means? I said, what? He says, not using the steps. Learn to use the steps. He said, get me mad when he did things like that. It says, but most fields of our generation, we witnessed the complete liberation of our thinking. It is not our age characterized with the ease in which we disregard an old idea for new, with complete readiness in which to throw away the old theory or the old gadget which does not work for something which does. We asked ourselves, why shouldn't we apply to human problems the same readiness to change our point of view? Were we not having personal relationship problems? We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We could not make a living. We had the feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We weren't happy. We couldn't seem to be real help of others. That's the nine-step promises in reverse, if you really look at them. And that's what I was living, those miseries. And I was hanging on to them, and I didn't know how to let go of them, because that was my norm. When we saw others solve the problems by a simple reliance on the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Now, getting to step three. We read how it works all the time, and I love what my sponsor used to say to me. He said, if you want what we have, you'll do what we do, and if you don't want it, don't worry, you won't get it. And that made a lot of sense to me, because I didn't want what they had. I didn't want what the guys that were in this room when I got in here had. I didn't believe they were really happy. I did a lot of things to prove them wrong. I read How It Works a lot. It says, until we let go of our old ideas, absolutely. It doesn't say if I do 50% of this program, I'll get 50% back. It says, I have to let go of my old ideas, absolutely. And what was keeping me sick is my old ideas. My old ideas is when my daughter gets married, and I used to tell my sponsor, just to say, Bob, you know, how am I going to not drink at my daughter's wedding? She said, well, how old's your daughter? I said, she's two. Well, that didn't work real well. You know, that's where my head went. But that's how I thought when I got here. We don't read How It Works the way it was originally written, although it was requested of me that I do. So I'm going to read it to you guys. And if you guys who listen to it a lot, you may see some changes in it. Really, have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our directions? Those of us who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a way of life which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to follow directions. At some of these, you may balk. You may think you can find an easier, softer way. We doubt if you can. With all the earnest at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil till we let go absolutely. Remember that you are dealing with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for you. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. You must find him now. Now we think you can take it. No, half measures availed us nothing. You stand at a turning point. Throw yourself utterly under his protection and care with complete abandon. Now we think you can take it. Here are the steps we took, which is suggested as your program of recovery. One, admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and life over to care and direction of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely willing that God remove all our defects of character. Seven, humbly on our knees, asked him to remove our shortcomings, holding nothing back. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make complete amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our contact with God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry it out. 12, having had a spiritual experience as the result of this course of action, we try to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all affairs. You might exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. A description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures, before and after, have been designed to sell you three pertinent ideas. A, that you are an alcoholic and cannot manage your own life. B, that probably no human power could relieve your alcoholism. And C, that God can and will. If you are not convinced of these vital issues, you ought to reread the book to this point, or else throw it away. My sponsor said, I want you to keep looking at that, because these are directions. These are not suggestions. It's suggested if you go on an airplane and you jump out, you pull the parachute. Works better. And I wasn't willing to follow directions real well when I got here. And I needed a man that was hard enough on me to tell me I was an alcoholic. You see, the book doesn't say we don't pronounce anyone an alcoholic. It said we would rather not. And he said, George, on your case, I'm going to go out on a limb. You're a drunk. You need help and a lot of it. So, you know, that's how I got to that understanding of the third step. And the third step's the ABCs, and I like to talk about the ABCs. I was giving them a little bit differently. A is my admittance that I'm an alcoholic and I cannot manage my own life. I made that admittance. That was an easy admittance. B, that no human power is going to relieve my alcoholism. That's my acceptance. That was hard for me because my wife coming back to me, my life at the time, my kids in my life, none of that was going to take away my alcoholism, my job, the money, none of that was going to take it away. And that God can and will. That's my convergence. And that was the change that I needed to have. Somewhere between that second step and that third step, there's a change, a shift in my thinking. All right. We found, too, we had been worshippers. I don't know about you. I love the third tradition where it says the fallen women. I came in here for the fallen women. I don't know about anybody else. And it says that was my only requirement, is a desire not to drink. And no matter what brought me in this room, it didn't matter. What matters is what keeps me in this room. And it's about a relationship with a power that I didn't understand when I got here, that I call God. And at the beginning, it was the God of my misunderstanding. At the very beginning, it was a group of drunks, good orderly direction, yet one day, I would like to be a smart ass. So I turned around and I said, dog, because God spelled backwards his dog, it was my higher power. I would use anything in the world but to talk about God. And God was a problem for me. It was a problem because when my grandfather died when I was 7 years old, and I watched the chaos that my family went through, when my aunt jumped in the grave, and my grandmother was carrying on. I still don't do cemeteries. just don't do well with it. It left an impression in my childhood that I didn't let go of. So God and I didn't talk since then. And when my father had to pay to pray, that was not what I thought God was about. Although I was given good religious upbringing, I turned my back on God and then blamed him for turning his back on me. So that was my understanding as I stay here. We had been worshipped. What a state of mental goosefish that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, and money, and then ourselves, and then with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sea, a sunset, or flower, who of us have not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, and these worship have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing we saw at last. Were not these the tissue of which our existence was constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It is impossible to say we had no capacity for faith, for love, or for worship in one form or another. We have been living on that and little else. Last night we were talking... Last night we were talking about the second step, and I used to say I had no problem walking into a bar and expecting top shelf alcohol from the bartender because he knew me. After the third or fourth drink, thanks. It wouldn't matter tonight. Excuse me a second. I'm fighting a cold, and it's winning. Thank you. After the third or fourth drink, it didn't matter if it was water in there or if it was booze in there. It didn't really matter anymore because it didn't matter. I expected what I expected when I walked in. And like I said, I used to throw $20 in a hole in the wall and expected to get good product. I don't know about anybody else in this room. I'm not only an alcoholic. And the substances that got me here does not matter anymore. So I really struggled with this whole thing about being here. And that was the tissue of my existence. Actually, we've been fooling ourselves, for deep down in every one of us, man, woman, and child, is a fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship, of other things, but in some form or another, it was there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and a miraculous demonstration of this power in human lives are a fact as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith of some kind of God was part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we had for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but in the end, it was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep within us. In the last analysis, only there where he can be found. You see, God is... Now, I'm not trying to get God in anymore, which is what I did with S and TM and all that stuff. I'm trying to let God out for the first time in my life. See, God has been in all along. I just did not let him out. I like to tell things with stories, and stories are always great. One of the stories I tell is about my sponsor, Bob. He died on December 10th, 1996, and that was a Wednesday. And I got the phone call. He went home. We had a week before. It was after Thanksgiving, before Christmas. And what ended up happening was I was at his house on Thanksgiving, and he didn't get a call from a friend of his. His name is Archie. Archie used to be a black man who was in a wheelchair. He was at Central House. He was his best friend for years. And Bob had 40-plus years when I got here. And I went to his house for Thanksgiving, and he was angry, real angry. And I said something like, well, my sponsor would tell me that if I have a problem with somebody, pick up the phone and call him. And he yelled and cursed at me, and then he picked up the phone and called him, and they set up a dinner. And at that dinner was a woman by the name of Helen Hunt, one of the guys who have been around a while. Bob was there, a guy by the name of Eddie Dalton, who came out of the Broward area, many, many years in the program. It was just an amazing time to have pizza with some old-timers, as I like to say. I was the youngest guy there with 3 years or 4 years of sobriety, and that total of the six people or seven people were there was about 140 years of sobriety. And he died that Wednesday after that. And I was doing a big book study on Thursday nights at the different place down in Broward. And me and a friend of mine, and I got a phone call, I called up and I said, I'm not doing the big book tomorrow, Linda. My friend's name was Linda. And she said to me, well, why don't we go out for dinner and then you make a decision whether you want to do the big book tomorrow or not. And we went out for dinner and she turned around to me and she says, well, what would Bob want you to do? I said, screw you. He would want me to do the meeting, of course he would want me to do the meeting. I said, well, after dinner, why don't we stop, and I stopped by St. Ambrose. That was his, there was a meeting on St. Ambrose. It's a church down on Federal Highway off of, can't think of the cross street in a minute, it went off of me, Hillsboro. And I went there, and there's a little outside chapel where I prayed. And I got up with a smile on my face, and Linda said, what's going on? I says, I got to tell you, I know Bob's okay. She said, what do you mean Bob's okay? I said, Bob is okay. I just know Bob is okay. What do you mean Bob's okay? He met my father and my grandparents, and he's home, and he's okay. My mother was still alive. And she said, okay, what do you want to do? I said, I want to go to the meeting, and let's do the book. And I go to this, the bottom line, and it's, in those days it was behind Nelson's. It's like four bottom lines ago. And in the middle of the meeting, the door opens, the door closes, nobody walks in, and the room gets cold. But I knew Bob walked in. Now, unless you have one of those experiences, you can't explain that to anybody. And if you haven't had one of those, stick around, because you will. That's an experience that I had. And we got very emotional. I knew Bob walked in, and I knew that was what was supposed to happen. And that's one of those experiences that I know that God was working in my life, and he was showing up. My mother was very sick. She was dying of cancer. And I had 5 years with my mom before she died. And towards the end, I one day I had a feeling, and I called up my mom. My sister, she was at my sister's house, and I said, how's mom doing? She said, she's bedridden. And I said, well, I'll be over right after work. And I was working at that time from midnight to 7 in the morning. And when I got there, I was talking to my sister, and my mother said to me, and she's laying in the bed, and she can't get out of the bed anymore. She says to me, they were here. I said, who's they were here? She says, you know, the guy you prayed to. I said, what are you talking about? Says, he was here. I said, who is here? Now, I got to remember, I was raised Jewish. And my mother knows that she's very Jewish. This was not happening, you know. I thought she was hallucinating. She probably was. She says, you know, the son and the mother were here. I said, what do they want? She said, they wanted me to go with them. I said, what? She said, they wanted me to go with them. I said, so why didn't you go? She says, well, I went with them. And I said, well, what did you see? I got to find out what's going on now. She's telling me the beautiful mountains, what's up in the hills. And she saw my father and my grandparents and da-da-da-da. And all the people that have long been gone, she was talking about as though they were right here in front of her. And she says, I told them I wasn't ready. I said, Mom, what do you mean you weren't ready? I mean, they came for you. Why didn't you go? She said, I told them I wasn't ready. She says, George, I know you're ready to let me go, but your sister's not. And that night, it was right before Mother's Day, that night I sat down at the kitchen table and I sat and talked to my sister, and at 5 o'clock in the morning we both walked into the room and watched my mother take her last breath. Now, that's my third step right there. That's God working in my life. And the gift that I got out of that is my mother got 5 years to see me sober and to be a responsible son, which I wasn't for many, many years. So making a decision without action is just mental masturbation, just so you know how I look at it. I made a decision to get a job when I got here, but I didn't go out and get a newspaper or knock on doors, so I didn't get a job. It was real simple. So even though I have a concept of what's going on, there's some actions I got to take. When people say there is no actions until the fourth step, I took actions in every one of my steps. I started with prayer. You know, my sponsor used to say, pray on your knees, and I used to give him every excuse. And he used to say, George, God doesn't care what position you come to him. He just cares that you come to him. So he told me to find a little spot and set up a little corner, and I had this little thing where I had a little candle and, you know, my own little thing that I was doing because I refused to pray to any kind of God, any kind of name at that time. And that's what I did. But I prayed to the God of my, whoever my sponsor's God was, and just don't let me drink. That was my first prayer. Whatever's up there, don't let me drink today. And at the end of the day, I said, thank you. Then I got involved. He said, I want you to get a 24-hour day book or daily reflections or something that you can read on a daily basis. And I would do that on the toilet bowl in the morning because that's how I prayed. And then I did it in the shower. And then I did it in my room. Then I did it in my corner. And then one day I went into a meeting and we were talking about God and about prayer. And I turned around and says, well, Jews don't get on their knees. And the guy who was at the room turned around to me and said, George, did you get on your knees to go through the carpet? And I said, yes. He said, did you get on your knees when you were hugging the toilet bowl? I said, yes. He says, then why are you so disrespectful of my God? And that hit me kind of hard. So he was my grand sponsor at the time. So I started getting on my knees. I don't think that changed my prayer life at all at the time. But I do remember one day not praying and running out of my halfway house, like most of us. And on my way out of the halfway house, I realized I didn't pray. I stopped. I ran back in the house. I got on my knees, and I said, God, I'm late for work, but I'll talk to you later. And I ran out. Now, I didn't drink that day. I don't know if that had anything to do with my prayer life, if that was just wishful thinking. But those were the experiences. It says practicing. Step three. Practicing. Step three is like opening the door, which in all appearance is closed and locked. We all need a key, and it's a key of willingness. Now, willingness without action was keeping me from the sunlight of the Spirit. So I was taking the action my sponsor told me. It says, the remaining step, step three, calls for affirmative action, for it is only by affirmative action that we can cut away the self-will that blocked us the entry of God, or if you like, a higher power in your life. I like to talk about my third step, my very first third step. My very third first step was done on July 4th of 1994. And I will tell you, I do a third step every morning. I recommit to the third step like I recommit to the first step. That's just what I do. It was done on the third step on a church around the corner from my halfway house, Joan of Arc. It started off with going to the fireworks with my sponsor. My sponsor saying, I need, Larry S. at the time, says, I need a meeting. I said, okay, we can go to the bottom line, which in those days were at the Veritas building. And on the way there, he says, do you know a church or a temple we can stop at? Now, there's a temple on one side and a church on the other. And you know, last week I told you guys how I used to pray. I used to go into the church and say, I know you're up there. Would you please go next door and tell my guy that I'm okay? You know, that's just the way my warped perception was when I got here. Well, I got to that church and I made a third step prayer with my sponsor. And when I got up, he said, okay, are you willing to turn your will and life over to the care of God? I said, absolutely not. He said, are you willing to turn it over to the care of the steps? I said, absolutely so. And that was my third step. Now, I was done on the fireworks going off in Deerfield and me doing all the things I was asked to do. He speeded me up. He slowed me down. And on July 4th is when I ended up doing it. And it was an event, and I still haven't forgotten that event. It was like yesterday. So, you know, the third step was key to me, but I didn't feel any relief. What I did realize when I got up from getting off of my knees, which I never did with anybody until that time, was I knew I did a good first step. I knew somehow that I finally admitted to myself I was an alcoholic, and I believed this might work. I didn't think it was going to work, but I believed it might. It says, we finally saw that some kind of God was part of our makeup just as much as we had a feeling for a friend. And that's what my sponsor said. You know, in the big book, it doesn't talk about sponsor. It talks about friend, new man, candidate, and protege. And I guess I was his protege because everything he gives me, I try to give to others today. And he taught me well. He taught me that my life is none of my business. And your life is none of my business. And it's nice to be in that position of neutrality with everybody. But what is my will and my thoughts? You know, made a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God. I had a lot of problems with that. And he made it real simple. My will is my thoughts and my life is my actions. And turning it over to the care does not mean turning it over to God. When my car breaks down, I have no problem getting in, dropping it off at the mechanic, giving him the keys and say, fix it. I'm turning it over to his care. And then when it's done, he calls me and says, come get it back. That's real simple. why do I have such a difficulty with the spiritual thing of turning my will and life over to the care of something that's been working in these rooms for a very long time? Because of my defiance and my rebellion being an outstanding characteristic of me. I said, being convinced, we were at step three, being convinced to watch the first part of the book up to this point, being convinced that my life was unmanageable, being convinced that I couldn't manage it and that I needed a power greater than myself, being convinced there is a God and I'm not him, being convinced of a lot of things when I got to that point. Just what do we mean and just what do we do? The first requirement is we're convinced that a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On this basis, we're almost in collision with somebody or something, even though our motives are good. I was in collision with everybody all the time. I liked that. I liked the arguments. I liked the head-butting. But I didn't have any spiritual guidance. And the third step is about spiritual guidance. And the reason I didn't have spiritual guidance is because my sponsor said page 62 is my page, so everybody else can look at it, but remember it's mine. It says, selfishness, self-centeredness, we think is the root of our problems, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find out we made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So I was hurting a lot of people and it was coming back at me. And I didn't understand why it was coming back at me. And it says, so our troubles we think are basically of our own making, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, although he usually doesn't think so. Above everything else, we must get rid of selfishness. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. So without any doubt, we're going to be talking about God from here on in. We've been talking about God all along. Call it whatever name you like it. It's God. Because it says the purpose of the book is to find a power that is going to solve all your problems. And it's God. And there's 300 and some odd different pronouns of the word God in the first 164 pages. The word God directly in capital G is 82 times. So 400 times in the first 164 pages, they're talking about God. And I kept saying there ain't no God in the book. My sponsor, love him to death, had me circle all the gods in the book. I was short one, he made me go back and do it again. And I found it finally. So, they tell us there's the how and why of it. First, we had to quit playing God. See, that was my problem. I played God my whole life. Next, hereafter, in the drummer of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. And simple idea. He is the Father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple. In this concept, the keystone through the new and triumphant arch, which we pass to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided us what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. He never provided me with what I wanted. I will tell you, it took 14 years before my daughter and I spoke from that six-month period. But I got everything I needed. And the day she came back in my life, and we'll be talking about that probably more next week, it was a blessing from God because I was ready to receive her back. I became the custodian I wasn't able to be. My son, he's still out there with no relationship with me. Now, it doesn't mean he's drinking. It doesn't mean he's drugging. He just has no relationship with me. That is a direct result of the way I behaved when I was around him. I've owned that. Painful stuff. But it's God that heals that, not me. That's one of those things that took a long time for me to swallow. Established on such footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, we discovered we could face life successfully. As long as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or hereafter. We were reborn. One of the greatest gifts I've got is my thinking is nowhere where it was when I came in. It's nothing like it was. And it really has nothing to do with me. It has to do with what this process put me through, where my actions, where I learned to act my way into better thinking instead of trying to think my way out of the box again. I was always thinking my way out of the box. It talks about For those who, fortunately for us who have tried, with equal misunderstandings, we can testify that anyone, any and all, can begin to do it, the third step. It's about practicing it. I get up every morning and I read the third step as it is out of the third step book. I have my own third step that I write, because I was also taught that I can't keep saying something just to say it, to be with it, just wording. It has to be felt in my heart. See, I didn't have a heart when I came in here. You guys let me grow one. And it really started in step three. The third step says, but the moment our mental and emotional independence is in question, how differently we behave, how persistently we claim the right to decide all by self just what we shall think and just how shall we act. Nobody's going to meddle in our personal independence in such matters. Besides, we think there's nobody that can. My sponsor said that regardless of what you think, feel, or want, you do this stuff laid out in front of you and God will take care of you. So my sponsor put my hand in God's. That's all my sponsor did for me in the third step. And I didn't even realize he was doing that. See, because my little plans and ideas weren't working out, and I was getting angry. Imagine that. So it is by circumstance, rather than any virtue, that we were driven to AA. We have admitted defeat, we acquired the rudiments of faith, and now want to make a decision to turn our will and life over to care and of God or a higher power. So exactly, how can a willing person continue to turn his will and life over to a higher power? He made a beginning. We have seen when he commenced to rely upon AA for the solution to his alcohol problem. By now, though, chances are that he had become convinced that he has more problems than alcohol, and some of these refuse to be solved by all his sheer personal determination and courage he can muster. They simply won't budge. They make him desperately unhappy. They threaten his newfound sobriety. Our friend is still victimized by remorse and guilt when he thinks of yesterday. Bitterness still overpowers him. His financial insecurities worry him sick, and panic takes over when he thinks of the bridge to safety that alcohol burned behind him. How shall he ever straighten out that awful jam that cost him the affection of his family and separated him from them? His lone courage and unaided will cannot do it. Surely he must now depend upon someone or something else. And that's what I did. And it says that our friend's life is still unmanageable, even though he is sober. And after all, a bare start in the AA program was made. More sobriety brought about by the admission of alcoholism and attendance in a few meetings is very good indeed. But it's bound to be a far cry from permanent sobriety and a contented, useful life. That is where the remaining steps of the AA program come in. Nothing short of continuous actions on these as a way of life can bring the much desired result. It tells us that our whole problem had been the misuse of willpower. We tried to bombard our problems with it instead of attempting it to bring it into alignment with God's intentions for us. See, I still don't know what God's will is for me on a daily basis. I know what it isn't. It isn't for me to pick up a drink today. What his will is for me to be the best George I know how to be and try to give that to someone else. My journey in the third step was very difficult for me. I still struggle with what's God's will, what's my will. My sponsor made it real simple. He says, George, you run straight when you hit a wall now. Instead of go backing up and trying to run through it again, turn left or turn right. God will take you where he wants you. And God has done that over my time here. There's so much I can say about God's will for me. His will was for not to have my children in my life for a long time. His will is to bring my daughter back in. His will was not to have me have a healthy body for a long time. It comes and it goes, and whatever his will is my ability to adapt to the circumstances of life as they are in front of me. When I walked into the third step, we talked about principles, and there was a whole bunch of negative things I walked into the third step with. One, I was powerless. I was run on self-will. I was independent, I was logical, I was full of ego, I was thinking, I was full of willpower, control, and I believed in success and self-sufficiency. I was desperate, but I was also unhappy, I was unmanageable, I was worried, I was victimized, I was full of guilt. I had remorse, bitterness, envy, insecurity, hate, and panic. How the hell do you turn that all over? You turn it over by doing the actions that's laid out before you by another human being. That was my sponsor. And I will tell you the gifts that I got out of that and principles that became positive from the negatives. I started learning about practice, something I didn't do in a long time on a daily basis, I pray. I became willing. I got a new faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Today, I see substance when I walk into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. Evidence, I got to stick around a while, and time takes time, and then I get to see the evidence. I learned about reflection. I learned about taking action. I learned about acceptance in the third step. I learned about God, effectiveness, being practical, caring, protection, guidance, instruction, achievement, dependence, understanding, trust, peace, brotherhood, solution, learning, endurance, determination, courage, admission, persistence, spirit. Learned about being quiet, useful, affectionate, God-dependence instead of self-dependence. And I found about what purpose and wisdom is all about. So if you're new and you're confused, do what you're told to do. Third step comes slowly. I'm here 18 years. I still struggle with step three. But I still do the work that was laid out before me when I first got here. And somehow or other, through that process, I haven't deemed it necessary to pick up a drink. Thanks for letting me share.